Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been rainy, and that's a good thing. Gives you a chance to stop and think things over, and relieves you of having to do the things that you thought you had to do, but you don't really have to do them. You can always put them off just a little bit longer. The Inkvists came up for Memorial Day weekend. Our old Lutheran pastor and his family, David and Judy Inkvist, we thought they had separated. That's what they thought led people to believe about 2 years ago, but there they are, back together. So who knows? They seem to be getting along about as well as they ever were, and what that means, I have no idea. They came up with two of their children, their daughter Kate, who's living out in New York City. She operates a website called High Dive, which is a guide to how you can have really cool things and pay almost no money. And it's very popular. It's not earning her much money, but, you know, there's always that hope. Their oldest boy, Peter, finished seminary, and he has a beach ministry out in Southern California. And their younger boy, Christopher, is 28 years old. He's still trying to find himself, and he came up with his girlfriend, so there was that old problem, you know, who sleeps where, and what do we do about that? But by the time the youngest child comes along, all discipline is gone. I mean, it's just parents are tired of enforcing the rules, so nobody really noticed. David Inkvist has a new job. He's the head of a nonprofit task force called Bringing the Faith Forward. Bringing the Faith Forward. It's funded by a very wealthy soybean farmer, Finn Bjornsson from Fargo, North Dakota, and he left piles of money to this, and it's very, very loosely defined what they are supposed to do. And it turns out to be the sort of a job that works better the less work you do. It's a kind of a symbolic job. Another word for it would be management. And so you sit in an office and you think thoughts. With the Inkvists there at their lake cabin, Pastor Liz went out to pay a visit on them on Sunday, and she sat down. They offered her a screwdriver, which kind of took her by surprise. No thanks, she said, no thanks. She had to go and visit a parishioner, Clint Bunsen, who had suffered a brain seizure on Thursday. He was he was lying underneath Pastor Liz's car at the garage, and he was replacing her muffler, and then the next thing he knew, he had taken the muffler off, and he'd put on these California pipes, and it sounded like an F-118 trying to take off, which is not really what a pastor would want. So he rolled out on his little slider, and he went off to see Dr. DeHaven, who did a cardiogram on him and advised him to change his life. And so Clint has decided he's going to do that. No more Saturday nights at the Moonlight Bay Supper Club, where you go in and you have a Manhattan to start off with, and you have the shrimp cocktail, and the Manhattan is always a double. You didn't order it that way, but it's always a double, and there's cheese dip and herring that comes with it. And then you sit down to the 16-ounce prime rib, and you have the baked potato with the sour cream au gratin, and you got a slab of pie the size of a mason's trowel, and then a rusty nail, and maybe two of them afterwards for an aperitif. And it's no wonder that people walk out of that place and sometimes get into the wrong cars. And everybody's kind of dazed, you know, from whacking the calories. No, he said, that's enough of that. He sat down Sunday brunch with Irene, and he says, we're in my salad years now. That's what these are. These are. I'm going to throw away my fat clothes, and I'm going to buy some skinny clothes, and, and we're going to do it, and we're going to have a big yard sale, and we're going to sell all of the stuff that we don't want or need anymore, and we're going to take the money, and we're going to go live someplace where we don't need to know anybody, and nobody needs to know us, and we'll just get us an apartment. We won't have a car. We'll walk everywhere, and we'll go to the movies 3 times a week, and we'll only do the things that we want to do, nothing out of a sense of obligation, and I'll read the books that I've been meaning to read for years, and we'll watch the ads for cheap airfare to places, and wherever you can go, Iceland or Mozambique or Tanzania, that's where we'll go, and we'll travel for cheap places, and we'll just live cheap, and a year from now, we'll decide what we really believe, and that's the church that we will go to, no matter what it may be, Jewish or whatever, Buddhist, whatever. And when the big heart attack comes along and the elephant steps on my chest, and then I'll just accept it, and I'll be grateful for that, and I'm just grateful that I finally figured things out. So what do you say? And then Pastor Liz came in at this crucial juncture, and she sat down and she asked him if he wanted her to pray for him. Well, pray for what? He said, I already know what I need, and a salad. I mean, what's to pray for? She said, well, I've got to go. She said, I've got to go off to Toast and Jelly Days and off to take my turn sitting in the Dunk the Pastor booth in Toast and Jelly Days. And so off she went. It's a big festival. They did not go, Clint and Irene. They didn't feel like going. They've been to Toast and Jelly Days every year for 40 years, and they've seen it. You know, they've done it. There was a toast race, always, a buttered toast race, and you have to flip it as you run along. And there was a blanket toss. There was the Dunk the Pastor booth, where Pastor Liz takes turns with Father Wilmer and sits on that little chair, that little seat above the water tank, and tries to look pleasant as people come up and they pay their dollar to get their ticket to throw a baseball at the bullseye to dunk the pastor. And it's all in good fun, except some people throw really hard. I mean, they really hurl the ball. Old ladies walk up and they just fling the ball as hard as they can. And they miss, but still, I mean, it's the eagerness that you wonder about. People with fistfuls of dollar bills coming to throw baseball after baseball, trying to dunk the pastor, and the ball's whacking into the backstop. And then they went to see the Jell-O mold contest. There were 4 finalists. There was a sort of a gray mold. It was in the form of a human brain, and there was a Northern Lake scene as well, all done in Jell-O. There was a rather magnificent nude, a Raphael nude, done in pink Jell-O, and there was a representation of the Last Supper, and the jury gave the prize to the Last Supper, though it was not the best work of art there, but I guess they felt obligated to. And Clint spoke to his sister-in-law, Arlene, who was one of the judges, and she said, well, you know, it's a matter of opinion. He said, could I have that brain? Sure, she said, why not? And she gave it to him, a brain of gelatin on a little piece of plywood. He carried it with him. He went off to see the Whippets play the Freeport Flyers in the Toast and Jelly Days ball game, which the Whippets won by a score of 3-2, a game they won in the 9th inning. When the Flyers had runners on first and third, there were no outs, and there was a ball hit deep to center, and Ronnie caught the fly ball, and the runners went to tag up just as Ronnie's girlfriend, Sheila, came running out on the field, and she had a pistol in her hand, and she was screaming. And she'd seen a woman in a center field seat who was talking to him out there, who she believed was the woman from Millet who he was seen at a bar with a week before, a woman who wears a crimson wig because she lost all of her hair when she stuck her head in the oven to try to kill herself, but she leaned against the pilot light and it, whoa, burned all her hair off. And Ronnie did admit that he had feelings for her, but he didn't say what kind of feelings. So anyway, there she was flirting with him in public, and Sheila came out on the field, and she had a pistol, and she got off two shots, and she missed, and he ran towards home plate, and then he realized that the ump had not called time. And the two runners were just wandering over towards the dugout, and he tagged them both, and they were both out, and that was the game. And it was not that woman out there in center field. It was a woman with real red hair, and she just simply appreciated Ronnie's playing in center field. And Sheila and Ronnie went off to the sidetrack tap to kind of repair their romance over a pitcher of Wendy's beer. And Clint wound up in there too, and he sat down at the bar, looking down at his brain sitting there on this piece of plywood, and he decided he'd have just one small beer, no bump, just a small beer. Gary and Ronnie came in, Gary and Leroy, I should say, the constables came in to ask Ronnie if he wanted to bring charges against Sheila for shooting at him, and he said, no, I knew that she was jealous. I knew that she was jealous when I took up with her 15 years ago, and she's got her faults for sure, and she did want to kill me, I'm sure, but she missed. And anyway, you know, if it's your time to go, it's your time to go. No, I'm not going to let them put the woman I love in jail. And so he cried, and they hugged, and there was Sheila. She's got big blonde hair. It's kind of teased, you know, and she's big in the hips, kind of paints her fingernails black. She's an interesting woman, chain smoker. She looked over at Clint. She said, what's that you got that you're looking at? He said, that's my brain. If this one wears out, they can do a transplant. And I've got this other one here. Somebody had called Pastor Liz to come, that she was needed down at the sidetrack tap. And she walked in. She saw that Sheila had this gun. And she walked up and she put her hands on Sheila and Ronnie. And she said, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you, and may the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen. And she reached for the pistol and she picked it up and it went off in her hand, and she shot up through the floor and she shot up to the apartment where the Hoppies have been living ever since they sold the farm, and they live up there ever since he had his stroke, and they were arguing about who invented the airplane, whether it was the Wright brothers or who it was, and she said it was somebody else. She just read a book about this, and the bullet shattered a mirror on the wall, and they never noticed it. Pieces of the mirror fell down. They were still arguing about the airplane when Clint and Pastor Liz came up the stairs, and they picked up the pieces of the mirror, these two old people yelling at each other. Clint picked up the pieces and put them in the trash, and Mr. Hoppy turned to him and he said, so what do you think? What do you think? And Clint said, she's right. Everybody knows she's right. It wasn't the Wright brothers. And out the door he went. And that was Toast and Jelly Days in Lake Wobegon. An amazing day. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.